well-pressed and well-dressed. You can't see any of that, though, because this is radio.
2SER.com.
Thank you for taking some time out to have a chat here on The Bear Next Door. June marked the date that the second Stroppies LP was released. It's a great record titled Look Alive. It follows on from your debut LP, Whoosh, which was released last year, a record that you said at the time was a heavy affair because it carried the stigma of being what they call an album. You know, the word itself does kind of carry a bit of weight. So now that you've got that kind of first test of endurance done last year, is it a case now that every album after will be that kind of easy breezy mentality?
Well, yeah, I guess we sort of broke its back as far as the birthing of the first record goes. I'm not sure how it's going to be in the future. Now, I guess that the problem of having done the first album is now you inevitably measure everything against it. So this new record, Look Alive, which I'm still not really sure if it's a record or an EP or a mini album or whatever.
Okay,
I guess it's just 8 songs. Definitely came a little easier. I think there were probably a few different factors that contributed to that. One being that we didn't really put aside a lot of time to make it, which might have just alleviated a lot of the sort of tensions that you might feel if you're left to stew on something for like a long time, you know?
Yeah. I think you were on the road when this started coming together, this record?
Yeah, well, we sort of were having a bit of a Burko year last year. We were going kind of full throttle. It was a good year, but it was a really intense year. And you know, we'd gone to Europe once, came back, went back again, and people over there were sort of saying, well, you know, you should get back here for May next year, and you know, it'd be great if you had another release. So I've never really worked to deadlines like that. It's quite strange talking about this being in the position that we're in now. You know, it was a very different sort of world. A year ago when all this stuff was sort of coming into focus, it feels a little detached and absurd to be speaking about it through the lens that we were looking at it through. But at that point in time, we collectively just thought, yeah, like, you know, we have these scrap skerricks. Let's see what we can do, see if we can sort of rise to the occasion, so to speak. A fair amount of it was written, just in notebooks in the tour van, and then kind of fleshed out once we got home, and we left a fair bit of the actual resolving to down to the recording process as well. That unto itself is sort of a space that we sort of delegated to see what ideas would come out and not, you know, have anything to resolve. So it was a different process for us, for sure.
So you mentioned that you're not quite sure what kind of format this record is, if it's an LP or an EP, you know, and seeing as how it's a band that kind of essentially fell together in a way, does that put added pressure to the way that you tackle songs? Does it become a task rather than just a way to enjoy your friends and to pass the time?
It's certainly a band that just fell together, but I think sort of without realizing it, we found ourselves in a position where it had moved into something quite different. To answer your question, yeah, initially I think it was hard to make that transition from something that was occupying a certain amount of our lives in a sort of haphazard way to sort of being like, oh, our entire life is engulfed by this thing. You got to feel pathetically grateful that without really realizing it, that this thing that you're doing is, you know, has momentum. And so just shifting our perspective on that, it's a great challenge to set yourself, you know.
I was kind of reading through some old interviews and articles late last night, and I was reading about when Whoosh came out, you said that you had never really played piano until the band came into existence. Is there a musical challenge that you like to set yourself for each kind of release that comes along now?
Yeah, I mean, there's never like a really formal write it on the ideas board kind of challenge. I'm sort of for the first time in my life taking music lessons, which is that's a new thing for me.
If you come from that DIY indie alternative backgrounds, is it almost like a faux pas in some way that you are musically formally trained?
When you have a creative practice, you have to keep growing. I mean, that's the name of the game. And I think those DIY and music sort of subgenres are great in the fact that they encourage people to basically do it, you know, do it first. Yeah. About it later, and that's a great impulse. But I do think that if you become dogmatic about that, you can sort of limit yourself and you can start repeating yourself. So I guess my sort of interest is really using the band as, and this is just me speaking personally, but as a vehicle for creative growth, really. And it's just kind of gotten to the point where I think like there's a lot of value and power in kind of in sort of learning this language that you can speak in a very heavy handed sort of way, you know, and then sort of actually having someone who can educate you and fill in those gaps and start to give you a sort of better perspective of your own sort of creative practice.
In terms of a record, what for you carries more weight? Is it the way that lyrically it comes together or the way that it comes across as like a patchwork collage of sounds?
The weight that I sort of associate with the record is just the, you know, the record as a concept sort of occupies in like the cultural consciousness, you know, since Sinatra or whatever did We Small Hours of the Morning, you know, that idea of a suite of songs that sort of inform each other and create something that are bigger than some of its parts, and that, you know, is really resonant and valuable and exciting to people. I don't know, that's just a strong, powerful lineage. I guess when you're making your contribution to that, you want to make something that can begin to sort of step towards the value that you might find in some of the records that you love, you know. The reason I maybe sort of am a bit flippy floppy on whether it's a record or whatever is that it wasn't put together with any sort of forethought to its overall composition. It was literally the 8 songs that we had written. Okay. So it feels, I guess, like an EP almost.
Like throwing back to Whoosh briefly again, I know that you're a big fan of the Beatles. I'm a War has had a big impact on you musically. It's like a big turning point.
Yeah.
So reading about the process of making a record like Whoosh makes me kind of think of like the White Album in a way. Maybe like Look Alive is, say, like the version of Abbey Road, like a step back into going, you know, to the roots, so to speak.
Yeah, well, Look Alive is definitely, I mean, the band started in the front room of our house recording on a little tape machine, and Look Alive is basically that, albeit with a few extra bells and whistles, and we've learnt a little bit along the way and sort of, I think, improved our craft. It's sort of a return to form in a sense. I think it's sort of the way forward for us as well, because, okay, you know, yeah, still trying, you know, a lot of different configurations and seeing what works in the working process. But I definitely think, you know, the sort of physical and especially mental space that a home studio affords you is, it's just conducive of the best kind of work for us, I think. I actually sort of credit a lot of that analog gear with, I think it was a bit the missing link for me with my songwriting, at least, because prior to buying a 4-track tape recorder, I had a digital interface, which, you know, you can run into a computer and record as many channels as you like. And I'm just, I guess, for anyone who's maybe listening who's not familiar with that, but you're spoiled for choice, really, when you're recording in that way. And I found very much that I was getting bogged down in the frills and sort of idiosyncrasies of the music instead of actually finishing songs when I was recording that way. So when I bought a tape player, I guess just by virtue of the sort of economy that analog equipment affords you, you know, it was just drums in one track, guitar in one track, bass in one track, and it's like, well, you can't do anything else, so finish the song. You know, like, there's always something that I put off. The songs are sort of, I think they're kind of opaque in a way, like they mean something to us and there's some emotional depth to them, but I don't feel like they're, I guess I just think it suits the form, really, short form.
Yeah.
And there's a lot, in addition to that, like a lot of, you know, our favourite bands like The Clean and Guided by Voices and stuff are quite well known for sort of releasing their music, you know, EPs and short form records, which, and I often think that's the best sort of their best releases usually, so I guess we just gravitate towards that.
Cool. Everyone's been in isolation for quite a while. Has that been a curse or a blessing for your creativity?
I've had a sort of strange experience of isolation, because I actually haven't, well, I've been in isolation in the way that, you know, the general public has been, but I've been sort of fortunate enough to work I run my own business, so it's been quite busy. So in kind of lamenting the fact that I'm not really getting what seems to be my people's experience of COVID, but by the same token, I feel sort of pathetically grateful that, you know, I do have the opportunity to work. So that it's a double-edged sword, really. The sort of reductive quality has definitely opened up a lot more space to do just a bit of housekeeping more broadly with fine-tuning skills and stuff, I've been, you know, I'm just sort of trying to learn new equipment and new tricks and stuff. So I guess, yes, short answer, blessings.